Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The Texalda Hill fire near Tok is now estimated at 4,000 acres. The Division of Forestry is managing the blaze, which was started Monday by an unknown cause. It's burning on Tetlin Village Corporation land, and State Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says yesterday was spent assessing what's at risk.
In the form of native allotments and cabins.
Mowry says three crews are assigned to the fire, and getting them into the areas targeted for protection requires helicopter transport.
Operation when you're dealing with, 60 firefighters, three different crews that need to be shuttled in.
Meanwhile, an Alaska Fire Service crew is working the 25-acre Hughes Mountain Fire, which is burning across the Koyukuk River and 4 miles from the village of Hughes. Water and retardant drops are helping a ground crew on that blaze. AFS firefighters also remain on the long-burning Zitsiana River fire south of Manly Hot Springs. This morning's Alaska Interagency Coordination Center report puts the total burn area at nearly 47,000 acres, including 15,000 acres consumed Monday and Tuesday as the blaze made a run to the west side of Kindamina Lake, where firefighters continue to protect cabins. Several lightning-caused wildfires are active in the Yukon-Charlie Rivers National Preserve. The AFS reports that one of the blazes, the Dome Creek Fire, is in the vicinity of the historic Coal Creek Mining Camp, 65 miles northwest of Eagle. The Park Service has closed its Coal Creek and Slavens Roadhouse facilities, which firefighters are using to stage operations. Eielson Air Force Base officials host a town hall meeting tonight in North Pole to talk about a recently issued document that offers guidelines for land uses around the base that would be compatible with the F-35 aircraft that will be based at Eielson beginning next year. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Officials with Eielson and the Air Force will be available at the meeting at North Pole High School to explain the 2018 Air Installations Compatible Use Zones, or ACUS, study and answer questions from members of the public.
It provides guidelines for development in the future with our neighbors.
Air Force ACUS Program Manager Fred Pearson says the new document updates previous ACUS studies conducted for Eielson before the Pentagon decided to station two squadrons of F-35s there. The new study is based on the different characteristics of the F-35s, which include a louder takeoff than the F-16s at Eielson under many conditions.
Very powerful engine. In many modes, it is louder than the F-16.
Eielson spokesman Lieutenant Kit Sanad Duanlamchan says noise apparently wasn't much of a problem last winter when the Air Force sent several F-35s here for testing.
Well, I do think it's important to note that we did have seven F-35s here doing cold weather testing and icy runway testing, for about 6 months from 2017 into 2018. And during that time, the base received zero noise complaints on the F-35.
Pearson says the new ACUS study will include analysis of where the noise is loudest around Eielson, including nearby areas under flight patterns that the base's pilots use. He says the study also will include recommendations on how local government officials could take that noise into consideration when planning development around the base.
We always examine our flight tracks, our procedures, and everything else to not only ensure that they are safe, but that they don't impact the mission and that we're not transferring noise from one community to another.
A recent study by the Fairbanks North Star Borough says ACUS studies also help protect military airfields from encroachment around the installation by development that's incompatible with the base's mission. They also include recommendations on land uses for areas that could be exposed to the risk of aircraft accidents. Pearson says so far that kind of development isn't a problem.
There's very little in the way of incompatible developments anywhere near the base.
He says the ACUS study is intended to help local leaders keep that concern in mind when considering zoning or other land use measures.
As the community develops, we want to work with them so that we can achieve compatible development, not only protect our mission, but the health, safety, and welfare of our neighbors.
Tonight's meeting at the high school runs from 4 to 7 p.m. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Late-run Copper River sockeye continue to come in strong, and the state has scheduled a 90-hour dip net opening at Chitna beginning tomorrow. A weaker-than-expected early portion of the wild red run shut down fishing last month, but the return has been improving in recent weeks, and Department of Fish and Game Area Management biologist Mark Somerville says it now appears escapement will be met.
Tremendous spikes here of fish later in the season. A good portion of those are probably hatchery-bound fish, So we're seeing strong returns probably there, and then we're also seeing some good late stocks seem to be performing a little bit better than the earlier stocks.
Cautioning that the overall run is still weak based on historic numbers, Somerville says over 680,000 salmon have passed a sonar counter at the river's mouth, enough to ensure the minimum escapement goal for wild salmon and to allow normal management of the dipnet fishery.
Hopefully we can go right back to just the management plan and manage on a weekly basis based on weekly sonar passage.
Somerville notes that while this summer's early run sockeye were small, the latter stock fish are a little bigger.
Which just strikes me to say that we've got some healthier stocks coming in and probably the reason why we're seeing strength in these later stocks.
Somerville says recent hot weather has seen the Copper River come up, but so far not enough to significantly limit fishing. Melting glaciers can result in rising tidelands, and falling sea levels are very evident in an area of Juneau. As Elizabeth Jenkins reports from the Alaska Energy Desk, some parts of the region are gaining ground at an astounding pace due to climate change-driven glacial melting.
Juneau is rising by about a half an inch a year. The uplift differs from place to place, but region-wide, overall.
That's fast. That's really fast. As far as we know, it's some of the fastest rates. These are the fastest rates in the world.
That's Roman Motika, a retired glaciologist from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Motika says what's causing the land to rise up is a phenomenon known as isostatic rebound. As glaciers retreat, the absence of pressure from the ice causes the land to spring up.
You know, all I have to do is walk out to Mendenhall Glacier, and you can see what's going on. So me as a glaciologist, that's sad to see my per glaciers wasting away. But
Motika says when researchers first started looking at this back in the 1960s, they thought that isostatic rebound was likely due to the glacial melt, which occurred hundreds of years ago. But today, the scientific models suggest it's also happening now.
Isostatic rebound, in this case, is directly related to climate change.
As the tideland moves farther back from places like Sunny Point, property owners can go through a legal process with the state, essentially claiming ownership over these new lands. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And I'm Dan Bross.